It is it's incredibly easy to spend an entire lifetime just collecting beautiful books on gardening.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like you can study all the regional soil types, you can memorize the Latin names for, I mean, hundreds of different plants, and you can buy the absolute best tools.
Right, but never actually use them.
Exactly. You can do all of that while never actually getting your hands dirty. We fill our heads with all this brilliant botanical information, but well, at the end of the day, our yard remains completely barren.
Yeah, and there's a real comfort in hoarding knowledge like that, isn't there?
Oh, for sure. It feels productive.
Right, because acquiring facts feels like progress.
Yeah.
It gives us this this illusion that we are doing the work, but it's completely safe because it doesn't require us to step out into the heat of the day and, risk failure.
And that illusion of progress is exactly what we are confronting today. We are stepping into the introduction of a Bible study series called The Tree of Righteousness.
It's such a beautiful study.
It really is. And our mission today is to make sure you get your hands dirty before you even turn the first page. We just want to sit quietly with you and capture the actual heart, the true purpose behind this entire journey you are about to take.
Yeah. And to set that foundation, the source text opens with a very direct, really centering question. It simply asks, why do we want to learn?
That's a good question.
It really is. Like when we gather together, or even when you sit alone in your living room to study God's word, what is the actual objective?
Right, because if the objective is just to gather more facts so you can sound smart in a Sunday school class, we are right back to collecting gardening books and never touching the soil.
Exactly. And the text draws a very firm line in the sand right here. Knowledge and information alone, they are not the goal. The true purpose of this kind of learning is total transformation.
Wow, yeah. Total transformation.
Right. It is about experiencing a changed heart. The author makes this vital distinction between knowing about God, which is just acquiring data, learning timelines, memorizing verses, and truly knowing Him through a deepening, deeply personal relationship.
Because we seek the knowledge so that the relationship can grow.
Yes, beautifully said. And as that intimacy grows, the way we live our daily lives begins to change in ways that are, frankly, undeniable to the people around us.
And, that transformation isn't just for show. If the goal is a changed heart through knowing God personally, what does that actually do for you when life gets impossibly hard?
Right, because it definitely will get hard.
Yeah, the text doesn't pretend life is always sunny. It leads us straight into the necessity of developing deep roots.
It's a sobering reality, honestly. The author explains that life is going to bring storms. That is a given for every human being. And, well, believers are not exempt.
No, we certainly aren't.
You will face seasons of difficulty, of deep uncertainty, of profound disappointment, and severe testing. The defining factor in a person's life isn't whether or not a storm arrives.
It's about what happens when it does.
Exactly. The defining factor is whether your roots have grown deep enough into the soil to withstand those gale force winds when they finally start howling.
And the booklet anchors this idea in Jeremiah chapter 17, verses 7 and 8. It starts with, "Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord." But then it goes on to describe a tree planted by the water, sending out its roots by the stream.
I love that imagery so much.
Me too. It says it doesn't fear when the heat comes, and in a year of drought, it doesn't stop bearing fruit.
Think about the mechanics of that for a moment. A tree with shallow roots, I mean, it will just topple over at the first major gust of wind because it has nothing anchoring it to the earth beneath it.
Right, just completely uprooted.
Yeah. But a tree planted by a stream sends its roots downward, actively seeking that constant source of nourishment. The text notes that when we truly know God intimately, we discover that our confidence rests entirely in His unchanging faithfulness.
Not in our circumstances.
Exactly. Not in our shifting, unpredictable circumstances. We learn to remain standing simply because He remains faithful.
So, what does this all mean? Well, think about it like reading a biography of a famous historical figure versus actually spending time every single day with a close friend.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it.
Right. You can know every date, every fact, every major life event of that historical figure, but knowing about them doesn't help you one bit when you get a terrifying medical diagnosis or when you lose your job.
That doesn't change your character either.
Exactly. But a deep, ongoing relationship with a faithful friend who is walking through the fire with you, that changes everything about how you survive the crisis.
And taking that biography analogy a step further, the author uses this to point out that God isn't some historical figure to be studied from a distance.
Right, he's here now.
Yes, he is a present reality. When those storms hit, the knowledge you have about him must translate into an active trust in him.
Yeah.
But that raises a very practical dilemma, doesn't it? If deep roots are what keep us grounded in the storm, how do we actually cultivate the right environment for those roots to grow in the first place?
Right, because we don't just, you know, wake up one morning with a deeply rooted faith by accident.
Well, no, definitely not.
The text gently reminds us that receiving salvation is just the beginning. It's the starting line. When we accept Jesus Christ, we receive the Holy Spirit, who awakens our spirit and begins this lifelong, sometimes difficult but beautiful work within us.
It is an ongoing process of allowing God to shape us.
And that shaping process requires an active partnership.
It really does. The text introduces this timeless imagery of the garden. Think about a physical garden. If you leave it unattended, even for just a few weeks in the summer, it doesn't just stay the same.
Oh, it gets completely overrun.
Yeah, it actively degrades. It becomes overgrown with weeds. In the exact same way, the soil of our hearts requires ongoing attention. It requires daily obedience and a continuous posture of surrender.
Okay, let's unpack this because I think this is where a lot of us, and I am totally including myself here, feel a tremendous amount of tension.
I agree, I'll do, yeah.
I look at the garden of my own daily life and the weeds are just relentless. I mean, I am dealing with work pressures, family obligations, endless digital distractions, anxieties about the future, financial stress.
It's exhausting just listing them all out.
It really is. It is so incredibly easy for those weeds to just choke out everything else. So how do you actively tend to this soil without it feeling like an exhausting legalistic chore? Like without it becoming just another item on a to-do list that I am failing to complete?
I think anyone trying to live a thoughtful life struggles with that exact friction. And the author anticipates this fatigue. The tending of the garden isn't meant to be a grueling religious exercise where you are constantly grading your own performance.
Oh, that's such a relief to hear.
Right. It is deeply relational. God provides specific life-giving tools to help us tend the soil, primarily his word and our active faith.
Okay.
We come to know his character, his promises, and his purposes through the scriptures. But it's how we interact with those scriptures that makes the difference between tending a garden and just reading a manual.
Because there is a profound tension between just reading the word and actually doing it. You know, there is a coziness, a real comfort in just being a hearer of the word.
Absolutely. It's so safe.
It is. You can sit in a comfortable chair with a hot cup of coffee, read a beautiful verse, feel a warm, fuzzy sense of inspiration, and then close the book and change absolutely nothing about how you treat your spouse or your coworkers that day.
Yeah, nothing changes.
But the text leans heavily into James chapter 1, verse 22, which calls us to be doers of the word and not hearers only. Being a doer requires immense vulnerability. It requires the courage to step out and actually put those instructions into practice when it is deeply uncomfortable.
And that vulnerability is the exact mechanism of spiritual growth. When James talks about being a hearer only, he actually says we are deceiving ourselves.
Wow, that's a strong word, deceiving ourselves.
It is. We trick ourselves into thinking we are growing just because we are consuming information.
Yeah.
But building the courage to actually be a doer requires an engine, something to drive it forward.
And what is that engine?
That engine is faith, which the text connects to Romans chapter 10, verse 17. That verse tells us that faith comes by hearing the word of God.
I want to make sure I'm following in the mechanics of this. How does hearing the word actually manufacture the faith we need to be a doer?
It works by replacing our anxiety with a track record of God's character. When you spend time in the Word, you aren't just reading ancient stories. You are absorbing the reality of who God is.
You're seeing his faithfulness in action.
Exactly. You see how he provided, how he protected, how he remained steadfast even when humanity failed. The more deeply you internalize that track record, the more confidently you can trust him with your own current storm.
Because the knowledge of his past faithfulness strengthens your present faith.
Yes.
Which makes perfect sense of why the author then brings in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6. Without faith, it is impossible to please him.
Such a key verse.
It really is. Faith isn't just a feeling, it's the actual tool we use to clear the weeds. Like, when I actively choose to place my faith in God's promise over my own anxiety, I am essentially pulling that weed of worry out of the soil of my heart by the root. I am making room for him to work.
That is a beautiful way to visualize it. You are intentionally clearing space.
Mm.
And when we do that, when we spend time in the Word, let it build our faith and then act on that faith in our daily lives, Well, the text describes a breathtaking natural progression that begins to occur.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The author shares a very intimate personal story to illustrate this progression, and I think it will resonate with anyone listening.
It's a wonderful story.
They talk about a specific season in their life, around the year 2010. They sensed God speaking to their heart, telling them, "It is time to blossom." Now, I have to admit, when I read that, my first thought was, what does that even look like in real life? It sounds poetic, but isn't it a bit vague?
Well, it does sound like something you'd read on a greeting card initially.
Right, exactly.
But the author sought clarity from God on what that practically meant. And over time, it was revealed that blossoms give off a sweet-smelling fragrance.
Okay, a fragrance.
Right. And in nature, that fragrance has a purpose. It draws bees to the nectar. God was saying he wanted the author's life to give off a sweet fragrance to others. The way we live, the way we handle conflict, the grace we extend, our very presence in a room should be attractive.
People should be drawn to the Christ in us.
Yes, exactly, like a bee is drawn to a blossom.
It is a stunning calling to be a safe, fragrant place for a hurting world. But the story doesn't end there, and this next part is so incredibly relatable.
Oh, it really is.
About a year later, the author shares this almost mundane moment. They were just busy in the kitchen, minding their own business, opening a cupboard to reach for something. And in that quiet, everyday moment, they clearly heard God's voice in their heart again. But this time, the message was much more challenging. God said, "It is time for you to mature."
And the sheer honesty of the author's reaction to that statement is what makes this study so trustworthy.
It really is. They admit to feeling genuinely a little embarrassed by it.
Would be too.
For 3 weeks, the author just walked around with those words, playing them over and over, trying to understand what was lacking.
And this is where the profound shift in perspective happens. God finally provided the clarity they were seeking. He explained, "I need you to mature so that you can bear fruit."
Ah, so that's the reason.
Yes. This laid out the non-negotiable progression of spiritual growth. First comes the unseen work of the roots. Then comes the outward beauty of the blossom. Then comes the difficult process of maturing. And finally, the bearing of fruit.
The text highlights this as a central anchoring thought for the entire study. The blossom is simply the promise of the fruit.
The blossom is the promise of the fruit. Let's just sit with that for a second.
Yeah, because I think it challenges so much of our modern culture. Blossoms are visually stunning. Entire cities have festivals celebrating them.
We love the blossom stage.
We really do. But their ultimate purpose isn't just to look pretty for a few days before they blow away in the spring wind. They are carrying a promise of something far more sustaining.
And the distinction here is between outward appearance and actual substance. In our culture, and sadly, often in our religious communities, we settle for the blossom.
We want to look mature.
Exactly. We want to sound spiritually profound. We want people to admire our apparent goodness. But God's desire goes infinitely deeper than our appearance. His deeper desire is that Christ be fully formed within us, and that genuine nourishing fruit, his actual life, be seen, touched, and experienced through us by the people who are starving for it.
A blossom smells nice, and that's lovely, but a blossom has never fed a starving person.
Wow, that's so true.
The fruit actually provides nourishment. If my spiritual life is just a bunch of blossoms, like saying the right things, having perfect church attendance, but I have no actual patience for my children or no actual grace for my neighbor, then I'm not feeding anyone.
That is the hard, necessary truth of this introduction. And yet the text offers a very gentle, compassionate reminder about the nature of this process. Bearing fruit is not an overnight event.
You can't rush it.
No, you cannot yell at a tree to make apples appear faster. Fruit develops very quietly, very slowly, over a long period of time, provided the tree remains rooted, nourished, and deeply connected to its source.
Which perfectly describes the posture that you, the listener, will need to maintain for this entire study, and really, for your walk of faith. If this growth is agonizingly slow and quiet sometimes, we have to learn the lost art of remaining in his presence.
The Christian walk is entirely about abiding, remaining rooted in his word when you don't feel like it, staying intimately connected to the vine.
Remaining faithful through the wildly varying seasons of life.
Because there will be winters where everything in your life looks bare and dead, and there will be springs of rapid, overwhelming growth. The requirement is to trust that we will be fruitful in his perfect time.
The growth may feel invisible on a Tuesday morning, but the text assures us that healthy growth in God is always, always producing something of eternal value.
It is such a hopeful message. It entirely removes the exhausting pressure of having to manufacture our own spiritual perfection by tomorrow morning.
It's not about striving. It's about staying planted. And this introduction gives us a beautiful, clear roadmap for the journey you'll be taking in the upcoming booklets. Over the course of the study, you're going to be exploring this garden of the heart in meticulous detail.
The path the author has laid out is deeply intentional. The subsequent materials will guide you through what it actually means to become an upright tree of righteousness.
And it gets really practical, doesn't it?
It does. It will walk you through the practical daily steps of preparing the soil of your heart, doing the vital, unseen work of strengthening your roots, and actively identifying and pulling out the specific weeds that threaten to choke your faith.
It's a comprehensive guide to allowing the Lord to do whatever is necessary in you, so that your life can both blossom and bear lasting fruit in every season.
It is truly a journey from the ground up, from the hidden dark depths of the soil to the visible life-giving fruit on the branches.
And as we wrap up our time in this introduction today, we want to invite you to approach this upcoming Tree of Righteousness study with a truly open, tender, and peachable heart. Refuse to just gather the information. Lean fully into the transformation.
And you know, the booklet concludes its introduction with a beautiful opening prayer, which I think serves as the perfect posture for us to adopt as we prepare to begin.
It's a gorgeous prayer.
It really is. It's a quiet, earnest petition. It asks God, our Father, to continually prepare the soil of our hearts by His Spirit. We are asking that His seeds, the truths of His Word, would fall into good receptive soil, that they would take firm root, grow steadily, and ultimately bear that vital fruit.
There is also a plea in that prayer to be kept from having a hardened heart. Or a careless one.
That is a crucial request, because a hardened heart, much like hard-packed dirt, cannot receive the seed at all. It just bounces off. And a careless heart is one that is too distracted to pull the weeds, allowing the good seed to be choked out. The prayer asks for spiritual understanding and for the supernatural protection of the seed planted within us, so that it won't be snatched away by the anxieties of life or the evil one.
It is a prayer asking to be rooted with deep strength, with clear vision, and with unwavering steadfastness. And I absolutely love how it ends. It asks for this fruitfulness, not just to make us feel better about ourselves, but for the sake of those closest to us and for the strangers we meet along the way.
True spiritual growth always, always results in loving others better.
It truly does. The prayer culminates in a simple, profound surrender. Your kingdom come and your will be done in my life.
It is the perfect, peaceful starting line for this journey.